Welcome to CPHT Connect, the only weekly podcast specifically for pharmacy technicians. Join us as we dive into the hot topics, tough conversations, and industry trends affecting pharmacy technicians. In each episode, we connect you with industry leaders who want to help you expand your patient care, pharmacy practice, and professional advancement. Now, here's your host, Mike Johnston, CPHT.
Welcome to CPHT Connect. I'm your host, Mike Johnston. Now, this is a very special episode of the podcast as it's being published as part of our partnership with Drug Topics. So if you're new to the show, welcome. We will be producing special episodes of the podcast each month in partnership with Drug Topics, where we're going to be highlighting the incredible work being done by some of the leading independent community pharmacy technicians across the country. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Meredith Ayers. Meredith is an advanced certified pharmacy technician, and she's joining us today to discuss her role as the administrative coordinator at Brimo Pharmacy, in addition to being a consultant, speaker, and owner of Snazzy RX Tech. Meredith is a seasoned pharmacy professional who has shared great insights during various NPTA-related events, and today she is with us again to provide some more incredible insights for all of our listeners. Meredith, thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike. I love being on here with you guys. Always something different to offer. So my background in independent pharmacy, I started as an after-school job in high school, was a clerk at the local independent. I've only worked at independents. Yeah. And it was either pharmacy or the hardware store after school. And, they were flexible with all the activities we had going on. Yeah. And so that's where I jumped in. And that's when I realized that's what I wanted to do. You don't realize it until later on that that's what happened sometimes. But all the interactions I had and the pharmacists and technicians I ran into back then really kind of molded me to where I am today. I got to see how they did community outreach, you know, the small favors that independent pharmacies do for their community. I'm from a small town, so everybody knows everybody. And so everybody has each other's back. And that was the cool part of it. And then you realize when you move to the big city, which I'm in Richmond, which is not a huge city, it's the same thing. Independent pharmacy, we have everybody's back in the community. And that's where it originated. And that's where I still am 25 years later.
So what was that initial phase in the pharmacy like? I'm assuming there wasn't any type of formal training, probably very similar to my story. How did you learn pharmacy initially?
So the job in high school, I was a clerk. But it was kind of when you could go back into the pharmacy and help file the paper prescriptions. This is before the days of e-scripts. Mm-hmm. You kept all your paper files. I'd go back and help with that. It's when I kind of learned insurance on a basic level. I was seeing the copays and kind of understanding who was getting what and where and when. And then you kind of learn the soft skills then. Kind of, you do. You definitely learn the soft skills then. And then independent pharmacy is a small world. And I think anybody listening to this will, if they don't know it already, they'll learn very quickly it's a small world, because it the communication between that pharmacist owner and the one here in Richmond, they spoke to each other. They knew each other and connected me and said, listen, she's got the personality. She wants to help the community. Teach her the pharmacy stuff and it's all going to meld together. And it did. It still is. It's ongoing. But I learned the pharmacy stuff when I moved to Richmond officially, 2002. And, you know, you jump back in the pharmacy when you get a chance and you fill some prescriptions. You learn how to, you know, make the prescription process and the label prints out, and you're just grabbing the labels and you're putting them in the bottles and you're learning how to match everything up, just the basics. Mm-hmm. And that grows and you kind of hear the conversations happening around you with the pharmacists, the technicians, the IT guy, the clerks, and you're learning it just by absorbing it. You don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. Until you go to have a similar conversation and you realize, oh, well, I heard them say this, and not saying that everything they said was true, but you absorb everything around you. And it's a different way of learning. And it's a great way to learn, I think. I think all the regimented courses are fantastic, but there's nothing like absorbing and learning that way, the old school way, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I think that with independent pharmacy, you learn pharmacy almost to a deeper depth because you're truly seeing and experiencing the whole side of it. So if you're working in you know, a chain pharmacy or a health system pharmacy or something like that. Typically, they're so large and there's so many moving pieces, and you've got districts and corporate headquarters that are handling certain things. So you don't necessarily get all the pieces to the puzzle. But when you're at an independent, and typically the pharmacist is also the owner and also becomes your friend and your coworker, you know, it's this unique relationship. And so you're learning about reimbursement rates and clawbacks and how all these things connect together. Has that been your experience?
You nailed it. And I think, you know, I think there is something to be said for the corporate environment. There's processes sure. and stuff that they can definitely that are so beneficial. But in the independent, you're learning it by absorbing it and you're seeing it as it's happening. And I guess the difference is we can see the pricing. Mm-hmm. We can see all of the inner workings. We're responsible as the technicians and the pharmacists and independents to put all that data together. Mm-hmm. We don't have somebody to do it for us. We are that somebody. And I remember learning, and it was, you know, those days, it wasn't that long ago, but it was long enough that you didn't lose on every other prescription. And when you did, it was a big deal. And it was, you know, they would save me like the side part of the labels back when labels were a full piece of paper. And the owner would be like, well, this was the beginning of what I call the fix-it stage. You know, the owner or the pharmacist on duty would throw that piece of paper at me and say, I need you to fix this. I'm not getting paid enough. And that was back when you thought you really could do something about it. You know, you could talk to your buying group, or you could, you know, put in a MAC appeal and do all those things. And sometimes you got a remedy. Most of the time you didn't. And that was kind of the beginning of the end there. But it was when I really learned a lot about the pricing and, you know, when they were going from AWP to WAC and all these terms, and it was there to confuse you. And it was, no matter what the end game was, the pricing was everywhere. And I remember contacting my local politicians to see what they, it was a whole thing. I mean, I got thrown into it immediately, but I call it the fix it stage because if there was an insurance rejection, nobody on the counter had time to call and fix these rejections. So it put me into a specific role where he was like, hey, I need you to come back here. Here's your office. Here's your computer. Watch the online screen. I want you to fix these rejections. I don't want to have to deal with them. I don't want anybody up here to have to deal with them. We're here to take care of the community. And he's like, fix this.
So that became your primary role then. You got
that was
moved
what
off the
I
bench.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. And I did work on the bench occasionally. We had long hours. We were up until 9 p.m., which is pretty rare for an independent. But so I worked a few days on the counter. And then most of the time was in the back. And most of the time, rejections I fixed before anybody in the front knew there was a rejection. Label popped out. It was like magic. They never had to even address one. It was the golden age.
So
but that's how you learn.
How did you learn how to do that? How did you learn, okay, you know, if we're not getting reimbursed on the script, here's the 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 different potential remedies for it, if there is a remedy. How did you learn?
There's no handbook.
Right.
It was trial and error. Very fortunate. Our local association and state association was right up the street from that pharmacy. Mm-hmm. So I had them on speed dial. I was like, what do I do? Where do I go? And, you know, they don't have a handbook either. Like, well, try this or try this. And I was also fortunate that the owner of that pharmacy was on some boards and national level that he was like, well, let's try this. This is where I see it moving. But most of it was me calling the insurance company. And that sounds so archaic. But back then you actually could get some help with more specific questions. Whereas now they, you know, you get pulled around to different departments. Back then you could be like, hey, this is what I need to fix. And they'd put you to the right place. Or Google. And that was, you know, Google was around back then, but it wasn't giving you all the things. And so it was literally cutting and pasting. And then instead of me just remembering what I did previously, I had notebooks upon notebooks upon notebooks of here's what I could do. Here's what I did. Here's what worked before. And that's how I also became the note taker of the year. I would never, you could always come behind me and figure out what I did.
Get ready to break through. The most buzzed about event for technicians, CPHT Live, is back for 2023. CPHT Live features inspiring keynote speakers, cutting-edge CE programs, fun networking sessions, and so much more. But that's not all. This year, attendees get 3 events for the price of 1. When you purchase your ticket for CPHT Live, you will also be registered for our World Pharmacy Technician Day virtual party and your choice of one of our 3 new signature events.
the Community Pharmacy Technician Symposium, the Health System Pharmacy Technician Symposium, or RX Ed Live for pharmacy technician educators. Remember, all of our events are available both live and on demand, so they can work around your schedule. And because they're all virtual, there are no travel expenses. Don't miss your opportunity to break through. Register today at cphtlive.com.
Documentation. I think that is one of the most critical skills in pharmacy. And I think we're trained to document the things that we have to for regulatory or accreditation or laws and compliance and things like that. But if we don't document these gems, these lessons that we're learning, the little aha moments, then they can, those can also get lost.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe someone is sick the day, you know, that issue is arising, or someone moves on to another pharmacy. So were you just naturally a documenter?
You know, I didn't work every single day, every single shift. And then eventually I left that company. And those notes, I mean, as far as I've been gone almost 10 years, and they're still looking at my notes on how to get claims through for certain things. And, you know, then compounding came through with billing compounds per ingredient and all these different things. And you don't really, in the moment, you're like, this is taking up so much time. I have other things I need to get done. But you don't realize how much time it's going to save if you take the time then. It's going to save you all that time going forward. You won't have to do that every single time. So the efficiency is amazing. And being able to see all of that in the back end at an independent is amazing. It's fun to see people come from chains and come from independents and the knowledge base that they have, and then putting it together now in independents, because you're seeing a lot of more of the mesh. And it's cool to see how they play off of each other.
So I think it's also really important to point out that your pharmacist and the owner made a very crucial decision to hand off that task to you. I think, you know, I speak with a lot of independent owners, and people typically fall into one of two camps. I think it's moving in the right direction, but I think you still have a lot of owners and pharmacists with the mindset of, you know, I've got to do it. This is my responsibility. And they just can't. There's so much going on that they're responsible for. But whether it's a pride thing or a delegation issue or, you know, management issue, whatever it might be, they keep it with themselves. And I think they're basically setting themselves up for failure. What do you think it was that your pharmacist saw in you to hand it off to you as opposed to someone else?
In general, he was a trailblazer. Mm-hmm. He is since retired. He's been retired for years now. He's probably, I think he's almost 80, but a trailblazer from the beginning. And I think he read people very well. And I know that's really hard to teach. Mm-hmm. And he had many, many technicians there that were capable, but not everybody thinks it's fun.
Right.
And he's like, can you call this insurance company? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. I'm gonna get him. And it was that, I think that mentality when he saw me do it one time on the counter, I was like, I'm not going to accept this loss. And, you know, I was naive and young, but he saw that and he was like, let me channel that into something permanent because I need it. I need to be the face of my pharmacy. My customers need to come to me and be able to talk to me about, you know, their prescriptions and the services. And he was ahead of the curve on services and medical equipment and all of these different things. And he was ahead on all of that back in 2003. And so this was just a natural thing. And I didn't think anything different of it. I thought all pharmacies are like this. They are not. They still aren't. And we're talking 20 years later. But if you ask him now, my assumption is that he probably saw like some sort of spark and some sort of attitude in me that was like, I think she's going to do well with this. She's driven. She likes puzzles, which we all know that's what insurance is. Mm-hmm. And that's what pricing is in pharmacy. It's just one big puzzle to figure out. And it's always changing. And he knew I'd enjoy that.
Very similar to patient advocacy. I find the people that like solving puzzles or solving mysteries, they work really well in reimbursement or in patient advocacy roles. Okay, I want to ask you to tell the audience, how did that make you feel as a new young tech to be handed that project?
I like to think that I was I'm not sure of the word, but I'm sure I took it like, didn't even think twice. Mm-hmm. I probably should have been more thankful because I didn't realize where it was going to lead me. And now I absolutely do. I knew where it led me. But in the moment, I was like, cool. All right. It's something different. It's a different thing to do. I come in every day and I don't do the same thing. And I love that. And so I think I didn't think about how he had pinpointed me for that role. Mm-hmm. Now I absolutely recognize that. But it was, now that I think about it, it was an honor to be chosen. Because I, you know, he had staff that had worked there for years that were doing other things and they were specialists in what they did. And he looked at me like, this is going to be a big thing in the future of pharmacy. And I want you to do it for my store. So I probably should have been a little more humble. I don't think I was at 21 years old, but
that's good though. I wanted your honest reaction to this because what I want to point out, because I know with this being a special issue, we've got a lot of independent owners listening to this episode. Normally our audience is mostly techs, but if you're the owner of an independent pharmacy and you identify someone and you consider and go through the process of handing off a task like that, you may not get an immediate thank you, right? But
correct.
You definitely, even if you didn't communicate it, you felt trusted and respected.
Absolutely.
And those are two of the biggest complaints that I hear from technicians working in other practice settings. So if you want to keep really good, talented people, that's one of the main things that techs need, is to feel respected and trusted and as part of the team. And with him doing that, even if you didn't communicate saying thank you in the moment, you still had that. And I would venture to say that that was probably a key turning point in you going on to become a career technician.
You have no idea. And you bet, I text him pretty frequently now to remind him, like, thank you, you were right, all those things. It's funny you mentioned owners showing appreciation to the technicians and showing the value of them. I had an owner come up to me at a speaking event, and he said, I see what you're saying. You know, I was saying what you were saying, you know, put them in these great roles and these important roles. He's like, but I can't sacrifice that good technician on the bench. I can't. And I said, I get it. But if you don't, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them either way. Because if they're wanting to do more and they can do more and they need to do more, you have to recognize that, because if you don't, they're not going to be happy on the bench and you're going to lose that morale.
Yeah.
Or you're going to lose them physically and they're going to go somewhere else. And it's a tough conversation. But
see, that to me, that speaks of, and I don't know who this person is, so I'm not trying to, you know, like,
I couldn't tell you their name, but
to like trash them or anything. But to me, that's coming from. It's coming from a mindset of lack. A mm-hmm. mindset of scarcity. I would look at it as, hey, I've got this amazing tech on the bench that I can transition into this other role. And I also have the perfect person to mentor the next person I'm going to hire for the bench, because I already know exactly who I want up there. So you can actually maintain it and get the additional stuff because you've got them as a mentor.
Perpetual.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all know staffing's hard right now, but especially in independence. But you know, technicians want this to be a career. It is a career. They want to do more. And that's not to say working on the bench is not important. We have to have that.
Absolutely.
But when somebody's showing that promise and showing that interest and they have proved that they can do it, have the conversation. Mm-hmm. And maybe right now, logistically, it doesn't work out. But, you know, if you don't have the conversation, you're going to risk losing that. They may stay there as an employee, but they're not going to be the same employee for too long. Or they may just leave.
And even if they were to stay there in that role, you're stunting their potential. You don't know what else they could be doing.
Exactly.
You could think,
have the conversation. And whether it works out in that moment or not, at least the conversation's there, it's rolling. And you don't realize these roles are important for the pharmacy to remain alive. You know, if he hadn't put me in that role, he would have been losing on claims and been like, I'll get to it later. I'll get to it later. I'll get to it later. And he didn't get to it later. Mm-hmm. So he found somebody that showed some interest and showed some little bit of brains, have a little bit, and, you know, ran with it. And, you know, I'm not there anymore. And he has sold the store since, but it's still a thriving company. And they have since then, you know, they replaced me when I left. So there's somebody still in that role. I mean, it's grown. Like after that, he gave me more responsibility and more responsibility. Right. And he did that with other employees as well in different areas. He knew that, you know, packaging medications was not my forte. It's not, still not. But he knew this back end pricing and insurance and all of that was what I really liked to do and what I was good at.
We're excited to announce the launch of BPTS, the Board of Pharmacy Technician Specialties, a new independent initiative of the National Pharmacy Technician Association. Through BPTS, pharmacy technicians can earn 13 specialized credentials, including board certification in sterile compounding, non-sterile compounding, or the CPHD Advanced. BPTS is on a mission to advance 1,000 pharmacy technicians' careers this year. Will you be one of them? We're focused on accessibility and affordability because we believe that you should earn more, not pay more. The choice is now yours. To learn more, visit bpts.org.
So today you're at Brimo. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your current role.
It's the wonderland of pharmacy. That's what I like to call it. My title is administrative coordinator. I am, you know, every time somebody asks me this question, I just say I'm the catch-all. Uh-huh. I have worked at every location in our company. We had three pharmacy locations. We had closed one during COVID, but I worked in all three at some point. I now work in our training center, our office and training center. So currently my defined role is I coordinate our classes, our pharmacy technician training course, our med management course. So we train the people that pass meds in group homes and day supports, CPR first aid, and refresher courses for all of the above. And so I do the coordination, the grading, making sure people have what they need, all that kind of stuff. I reconcile our medical billing and vaccine billing. I am part of our marketing team. And so I run our website, social media work. We have a boots on the ground marketing representative. And so I partner with her. If she can't get to an event, I get there. And then she kind of, we very synergistic relationship. I'm looking around, like I have all sorts of stuff I do. Like yesterday I went to a career fair and to promote our pharmacy technician training and all sorts of different things. And then when they need more things to come up, I can do help with workflow. I do go help at the stores when they need it. It's rare these days because they have a great team in both places. I help our IT specialist. I do insurance for our long-term care claims. All of the above.
This is exactly why I wanted you on this first special episode, because I want pharmacy owners to really hear all the different ways that techs can be involved in the operations in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. We have multiple technicians in advanced roles. You know, I have a technician that all she does all day long is compound in our hazardous non-sterile lab. That's all she does all day. Another technician that runs a weight loss program full time. She has a clinic room built out for her. It's medically managed weight loss. And then another technician that runs our sink program. 100% of the time it's her. Another technician that runs our compression clinic. So we do compression hose for edema, lymphedema, things like that. I mean, it's crazy. And then we have another technician who is just now coming on as a technician from a driver position. And he is learning our long-term care business so he can maintain relationships with them. So our technicians here are killing it, honestly. And we teach. We have technicians, four technicians here, including myself, that teach part of our technician class.
Tell me about the culture at Brimo, because I follow you guys online. I joke that I'm going to go apply for a job if I move to Virginia at Brimo, but you guys have got an amazing culture. We can swap. Okay. My team would probably be real happy. Yeah. So tell me about the culture at Brimo and what you think the owners there are doing that makes it so unique.
The culture here is amazing. I don't like using the term that a company is a family because I think that's intrusive to people's personal lives. I'm not speaking on the behalf of Brimo when I say that. That's just my personal opinion. However, it's the closest thing you're going to get to feeling like a family at a company because it is family run. It's family owned. But Catherine, who is the current president and CEO at Brimo, is invested in her employees. And every day is not magical. I mean, I say it is, you know, we have our own everything, you know, things happen.
Right.
Things happen. Things explode. Sometimes there's dumpster fires. We're no different than any other pharmacy in that aspect, but the way we manage it and the way our management team handles it and the way that our staff handles it is magical. So that's what's magical about it, is how everything is handled. She invested in extra education for all of her employees. She sends her managers off to trainings, conferences. The entire company was invited to do a leadership training. It was a 3-day intense weekend, and brought in the trainers here in our classroom. We have a 30 to 40 person classroom, and, you know, a good chunk of our staff, it was optional, but we went through a 3-day intense training, leadership training. And that to me was a huge investment for her. And I'm not talking just the money, but it was a time investment. And it was investing in the fact that, you know, she had a trust in her staff that we were going to take this and go with it. And we did. And that was about a year ago. And it's not like they did it and left it, maintain that as part of the culture, you know, activities and lunches and things like that. And that's great. But the words of affirmation are there. We have a program that we call it the Kudos Program, where if you see somebody else in the company doing something great outside of their normal everyday, you write them a kudo. And that kudo has monetary worth.
Okay.
But it's also really cool to get it and be like, oh, you noticed me doing that. That's really neat. And so that's something we do quarterly. And everybody's eligible for it. It's not just, you know, managers or whatever. You can write one to your coworker, and it's neat. And we do have two locations. We're in the same strip mall, but we're in separate buildings. And you don't always see everybody on this every single day. You're in your own worlds. But the fact that they have created this environment where, you know, you can call down to the other store and see if they have something, and it's like, hey, Donna, what are you doing today? And it's, you know, we're all really good friends. And I think that was important to maintain as a family run independent pharmacy, because when a customer walks in the front door, they feel that immediately. So as long as we're actually doing that, we're not faking it. We're not, you know, we're not having the have a nice day, blah, 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 recorded messages. We are genuinely like this because of how she has created the culture.
And that trickles down to the patients. Yeah.
For sure.
Let's talk about independent pharmacy just in general. Obviously, it is a really rough environment right now on a lot of different fronts. What do you see are the top struggles or challenges that are being faced by independent pharmacies?
I think the big two, one is a pharmacy that has a business model of filling prescriptions, and that's it, because we know that that's not viable anymore. And then the second is staffing. And I think that's across the board everywhere. But at independent pharmacies, it's especially hard because you're looking for that quality and you're looking for somebody trustworthy, because not all independents, but most are family run. But all of them have a sense of that community. So you want somebody trustworthy. You don't want, you know, just anybody. And so that makes it a little bit harder. It's a barrier to get through for staffing. And I know that's what's going through owners' heads when they're trying to move around their technicians. I'm not blind to that, but it's important to keep all of it in mind. But, you know, you can't have a pharmacy that's only filling prescriptions. You're not going to last long as an independent. And we're seeing that across the country. Independents are closing doors everywhere.
Yeah.
Because that's what they knew. And so you have to jump into the services. And that's all part of pharmacy. Don't think just because it's not the traditional way that it's not pharmacy. And you can absolutely get your technicians involved with that. You know, we can get immunizations now. Community health workers, that's really blowing up.
Yeah.
And all of that is going to make a more stable business model and environment for independent pharmacy. And then it's also creating more roles for technicians to get involved so that pharmacists can do all the things. Because they can do so much more than they're able to do right now because of all of the issues we're running into, staffing. And we still have to fill prescriptions. That's, you know, that's not going to go away. But you got to look at the big picture, the end game, as hard as it is to see it through the gray. It's, you know, you still have to get there.
It's there. Yeah.
The goal is still there.
What do you think are the biggest opportunities in independent today?
I want to say medical billing. It's going to be a tough one to break through because provider status for pharmacists and pharmacies is tough. Mm-hmm. But we're getting there. I think cash-based clinical services. People have more access to pharmacies than they do their primary care, and we need to be ready for that. we should have been ready a while ago, but we really got to get on it now. And people will pay what they can, and they will pay for these services because they need them. Mm-hmm. And we should be getting paid for our time. And pharmacists, technicians, all of the above, people are willing to do that. I think pharmacy's been scared of putting a price on that, and we shouldn't be. We're valuable. Mm-hmm. And we need to take a look at that a little bit more and provide the information to the patient. If they are looking to get reimbursed, walk them through that. But we just have to explain how these contracts and things aren't kind to us, and this is what we need to do. And I think people understand that. You just have to communicate it.
So as we're going to wrap up here, I'm curious, what message would you have in the current environment to independent technicians? But then separately, what message would you have to the independent pharmacy owners about technicians?
Unpopular opinion. Here we go.
Okay.
Top down is not going to work for much longer. And involve your technicians. Mm-hmm. Transparency. That doesn't mean tell me all your business secrets. That just means give me your goals. I want to help the company. I want to help the pharmacy meet the goals. Keep us in the loop. We want to help. We want to be part of it. And we're not behind a pharmacist, we're beside them. So we want to be a part of it. And, you know, let us do that. Let us grow. Put us in those positions. And to the technicians, fight for it. If you find something that your pharmacy is getting involved with or has been involved with, say, hey, is that something I can jump in on? Mm-hmm. Keep your voice going. And if it's a no today, it may not be a no tomorrow. Just keep on going.
Fantastic. Well, Merida, thank you so much for joining us today and taking time out of your day to tell us a little bit about your journey and some of your insights on community pharmacy and the pharmacy technician. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. I hope you found the conversation both informative and inspiring. To access resources from today's episode, including links and show notes, or to send me your questions or feedback, just visit cphtconnect.com. If you enjoy the show, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Your support means a great deal to us. Thanks so much.